you people. This is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast excellence. All right.
All right.
Richard Roper is in the studio. He's about to review The Last Jedi, the new Star Wars film. But let's just set up the rest of the day before we do that.
All right.
We've got coming up Tom Skilling, who will give us greater detail on what he just told us a few seconds ago.
Mm-hmm.
More snow tomorrow. And then we got to look ahead to the weekend because there is something happening on the weekend that might be an event of majority.
Oh, boy.
Hmm. Did he mention it was cold today? Because it feels like it all of a sudden, doesn't it?
It does. He did mention that, and we will be talking about that with him as well. All right, that's coming up.
Okay.
Brendan Riley's going to be here.
Oh.
City has got a vehicular terrorism task force that it has just put together.
Really?
Wow.
Okay.
I don't know if I feel better about that or scared. But I guess there have been so many incidents with car thefts, right?
And then a couple things that need our legal attention. So our legal analyst, Michael Monaco, will be here in 4 o'clock hour. And then I would just like to tell you that there is much to be entertained by over the last few hours in the world. And then I would just like to say this.
Mm-hmm.
How is it possible that a guy rode a horse to go vote for himself?
Amazing.
I mean, the one thing about Roy Moore that I find most interesting is that, you know, he pines for a simpler time in America, right? A time of family and a time of where people, you know, they believed in God before government and they lived on farms and they worked it. And then they had people of different races working for them as their chattel. They could sell them.
Oh, boy.
Have sex with them or torture them. Whatever they decided to do, it was their property. That was it. That he liked that. And then so whether you think Roy Moore stands for traditional values or you think he stands for a lurching back of in time. I mean, he did say everything after the 10th Amendment we could toss out.
Get rid of it.
Includes
sure.
The right for you ladies on this show to vote. By the way,
keep that in mind.
Just letting you know. And also that Emancipation Proclamation, that might be gone too. We might just have to do away with that.
He
probably wants to start with the Second Amendment as well, right? We can drop one as well.
Right.
Let's just go 2 through 10.
Keep two. Yeah. Definitely keep two.
Two and moves up to one. Mm-hmm. I can't do any more math.
The horse only really works in like Wyoming.
And the horse.
Alabama? What?
And then he gets on a horse.
Strange.
Which was had a nice trot to it, a nice turn of foot, as we like to say in the equine business.
Well, just for those wondering, it was a horse, not a pony.
It was a horse.
But how often do you actually get the chance to say, "And the horse you rode in on," to a guy, you know, to actually say that to someone?
Yeah, he's got that going for him.
He probably hears that all the time.
Yeah, that was very good. And he gets on his horse. Have you missed this? They staked out his house to, you know, show him going to go vote. I mean, that's a standard shot, right?
Sure.
But in generally in a special election, it's never that big of a deal. But these are different times.
Mm-hmm.
So they're staked out in front of his family manse, which apparently is a farm. And he goes out to the barn. He gets on the horse. He rides the horse into town.
Yep.
I mean, let's just put it this way. The Andy Griffith Show was too modern for him.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because they had cars and they had, you know.
Whatever happened to Aunt B, you know, that single hussy out there. Never found out what happened to Uncle.
Thelma Lou. There were things about that.
Too many.
You know,
Helen Crumpet. There were a lot of single tarts.
Well, we might just not understand it. I mean.
That's what they're saying, by the way. There was an interview with the Secretary of State of Alabama today who said, listen, what's going to happen here tonight? And he's a Republican because everybody in the state is Republican except for the one guy that's running against Roy Moore. America may not understand it, but Alabama does, and that's just the way it is.
Well, even comes down to that horse, you know, riding a horse in. I guess, you know, someone here would never do that.
I think what was tough to understand was the news conference held by him and his wife yesterday. I think that was
she was fun.
It was more when he said that you know. Like they do know they're not mad at Jews or they're because they do have a Jewish attorney.
No,
that part.
One,
but
one.
You have to say it the way she said it.
Yeah, the way she said it was
attorney me. Is a Jew.
One
is a Jew.
And she was so pleased as if I've made a point. I don't know why no one ever thought to say something like some of my best friends are black.
Boy, there's nothing.
One of our attorneys,
and
is
they're
a
not
Jew.
Friends.
By the way, happy Hanukkah.
to Roy Moore's attorney, and everyone else.
And they're all in fellowship.
Let's, yeah.
Right. I'm going to have a stroke today, I swear. Okay. I have to stop even. I don't even know if I can do the news.
It was a lot to take in.
Here we go.
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. I tell you all this because I've seen it all, so I just want to set the record straight while they're here. One of our attorneys is a Jew. We have very close friends that are Jewish and rabbis, and we also fellowship with them.
Yeah, and there wasn't a tinge of irony there.
I mean, SNL could not do that as a cold open. They would toss it out for being too unsettled.
I just want to know, what was it? What was it? What the person who started the applause line on that?
I know.
What were they thinking? Like, yes. Well, now that is awfully ecumenical of you.
See, they know a Jew.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Many Jewish Hollywood celebrities today basically tweeted the same thing. Just one
is a Jew.
Yeah.
But a Jew, and that's one of those things that you know, there are a lot of Jewish people who, when they hear somebody call somebody else a Jew, mm-hmm. it's like when a black person hears the blacks, right? It's sort of like, you know, and it's not quite offensive,
it's not quite.
But it's leaning toward, we know what you're thinking.
Yeah, kinda, I guess that's probably true. You'd want to kind of know why are you saying it that way. The whole thing, it didn't, like Judy said, did not come across.
She was so pleased.
But they're all in fellowship, so it's okay. Yeah. I don't really know what that means.
That means they're not Muslims.
Because they're not invited.
That's exactly what that means.
It's one of those multi-denominational things where various religions get together and stand in different corners and kind of stare at each other for a while. And then they say, see, we all get along, and then all go in their separate cars and drive away as fast as they can.
And by the way, Jews for Jesus don't count in that. Because that's a separate deal. I think you're going to find most rabbis are going to step up and go, you know,
Well, she mentioned a rabbi as well, that they know a rabbi.
Yeah, they know a rabbi.
At mm-hmm. one of the very fellowship things.
Yeah. The guy, you know, was on the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama. One would imagine they've run into a Jew or two over the years.
You can't make it up. But then did you hear the veteran buddy who came up and said they accidentally stumbled upon a brothel where there were underage girls? Accidentally stumbled upon one.
We just happened to be driving by. We were almost running out of gasoline, and we decided to stop at the nearest place had lights on.
It was Vietnam War.
Underage brothel in Vietnam in Da Nang.
Right.
So the main testimonial was, did not go into the brothel and got the Jew attorney. That was the big character testimony.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. For God's sake. All right.
So those were his character witnesses.
And then the president tweets out a bunch of stuff today. We'll get to Richard's review of The Last Jedi in just mm-hmm. a second. But then the president tweets out some stuff that he says he doesn't know any of the people who've accused him, but yet one of them was on Apprentice, mm-hmm. and then there's a record of one of them being in a hotel room with him. I mean, there's
pictures, video of him with several of the accusers.
And he never met or didn't know any of these people. And then again, just provably false. All he had to do was say these allegations are false. He doesn't have to then say, well, I don't know or I've never met these people, when it's provable that you do know them. You've had contact with them. Again, stay off the Twitter. Put your thumbs down. Mm-hmm. And then he got Sarah Sanders mm-hmm. at the press conference today saying about his tweet that Kristen Gillibrand would do anything for his campaign donation. Well, you'd have to have a dirty mind to think that. Well, that's what you don't have to have a dirty mind. Everybody. Yeah, hey, she'd do anything for that. When a guy says that.
Yeah.
We all know
what
they
the
mean.
That's sure.
Please. Let's not pretend that that's not true.
No. She was trying to say that he's used it in reference to men in the past. So obviously this was not a female slight, when I think most people would read it that way.
Okay. Yeah. All I want to say, Trigger, thank you for being here. And I am now going to ride my horse in and out of the show all day long. Isn't that right?
Just out of the traffic.
Do they still allow horses in malls?
Did you ride one on Michigan Avenue?
In Alabama. In Michigan Avenue, Alabama. Here is Violetta.
Traffic is sponsored by Burlington. Watch for a crash on the... Thank you, Trigger.
It's here.
Richard Roper is here to give us one of the first reviews of The Last Jedi, the new Star Wars film.
The one thing the nation and the world can still agree on, right, is that the Star Wars franchise will live on forever. This is Star Wars 8 in the main Star Wars canon, right? Mm-hmm. Chronologically, and according to the Star Wars timeline, it is called The Last Jedi. And one of the things I love about these Star Wars movies, you just heard that famous John Williams score, and I was realizing this as I watched the last one, this Last Jedi, because there are people who know every single Star Wars character and know who Darth Nihilus is and General Snoke, and then there's some people that just know there's Luke and there's Obi-Wan and Darth Vader. But no matter what, the music always tells you who you should root for in these movies, because true. Whenever there's a dark character, you can always hear, and they give them great uniforms, right?
Yeah.
Because like even the bad droids are all in black and really menacing looking, but the cute droids are in orange and white. But you hear that or anything like that,
you get scared.
And then they make the evil generals are all pasty faced and they're played by evil British actors.
Yes. Yeah, they don't get a chance to get out of the sun.
So in The Last Jedi, Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, is supposedly the last Jedi. That's where we're at right now. The resistance is falling apart. They're almost always falling apart, right? Mm-hmm. As the First Order takes over. And General Leia, played by the late, great Carrie Fisher, has just a few hundred troops left. And now it's a matter of they got to find Luke Skywalker, the last Jedi, because he could spark a hope in the resistance. So the movie's all about bringing him back. Yes, it's the same plot as Rocky V. I realize that.
Still great.
But I'll tell you guys this right off the bat, too. I'm giving it 3.5 stars. I really liked and admired The Last Jedi. Now, 2 years ago, I was here telling you guys about The Force Awakens, which was the first of the new Star Wars movie. And I love that one. That was the one where, spoiler alert, Han Solo met with an untimely end. And it was a shocking thing when it happened. There are major consequences here, but they don't strike. It didn't strike me, at least, as much in the heart. So it's about 2 hours and 32 minutes. So I felt it was a little long. Mm-hmm. And the whole bringing the last Jedi, he was the reluctant Jedi. After a while, come on, Luke. Let's face it. At some point, Luke is going to have to get off that rock and ignite the saber, the lightsaber, even though he keeps saying, oh, all hope is lost. What I do like is the international multi-ethnic cast with Daisy Ridley, who's like the new heroine, and John Boyega. And Benicio Del Toro shows up in this one, and Laura Dern pops in. And then you still have your Mark Hamills and your Carrie Fisher. So it's a cool multi-generational tale. Obviously, the special effects are going to be great. There's always a couple of good, really cool callbacks to like earlier movies where someone pops up and everybody in the crowd goes, oh my God, is that? And it is. But I'm not going to say who's in there.
Okay, got it.
Thank you for no spoilers. Because they're everywhere on social media.
Oh, terrible.
I have to keep my eyes closed because I'm so excited to see this movie. I don't think I'm going to have to see it for the first few days. So
I'm supremely ticked off, especially at, you know, there was this embargo, okay, which we have to honor. They let us see the movie in advance, which was today, this afternoon. Movie comes out in a couple of days. But what I didn't appreciate was a lot of critics or bloggers or whatever they are who got to see it, they would tweet out, well, I can't say anything about this movie, but it blew me away and you're going to be heartbroken at some shocks and turns. Well, then you just gave your little review. Respect the embargo. Also respect the movie more than to give it a 140-character review. Get into some detail about it.
Richard, can I ask you about Carrie Fisher's role here? Obviously, her passing, I didn't know if they had already finished shooting at that point or if there was some things they had to work with.
Yeah, they had her role pretty much done for this one. The big thing is we're heading into 2 years. We're going to get the ninth and final chapter of this main Star Wars arc.
Because the Rogue One new series is going to go on, is going to take over, right?
All kinds of other, yeah, exactly. But this is the Star Wars that we saw in the 70s, and then we had the three prequels that came after that, and now we're back in the timeline. It was always intended to be three trilogies, so this is the ninth and final episode in that. And at first they talked about maybe using footage they had of her already, and then they talked about digital things. The last thing we've heard is that they're not going to have her character in there at all.
That's too bad.
Which I'm not saying anything happens to her in this chapter that would necessitate that, but I think they're gonna work around that. Which I think is probably the best. There's a lot of ways you can do that. You can advance the story 15 years. You can start with a funeral or pass by a monument to General Leia. But it's sad to see her in this one. But it's a full performance. It's not like it's just a couple of lines there.
I was wondering.
And each of the veterans.
Oscar nomination, maybe?
Maybe.
A lot of people are talking about the posthumous one.
Yeah, you know, there's a chance of that. And a lot of people are also saying that Mark Hamill might get a supporting actor nomination because he's always been such a good Jedi about being Luke Skywalker for 40 years. I mean, he's had other cool career things he's done, but he's never been one of those guys that's saying, I'm tired of being called Luke Skywalker. He's embraced it. And it's a major role here, but it's a supporting role, and he's very good in it.
He's had an interesting career arc because of the accident, right? I mean, he was on his road to a certain level of stardom because of Star Wars, and then he has a car accident. He got facial damage. He looks different. He was never able to kind of regain those boyish looks, and I think for a long time they didn't even cast him in other roles, because the guys who ran him, his manager and agent and stuff, were like, well, we don't want to darken him too much in terms of character development. So he did a lot of voiceover, did tons of cartoon work.
He's
did some other
the
really,
Joker in a Batman animated series.
He's a great actor, but it was I mean, it was sort of the happenstance of, you know, as opposed to having a Pierce Brosnan-esque kind of career, or actually a better example would be a Sean Connery-esque kind of career, where he's known for one character but then does a bunch of
other things. Yeah,
he is kind of in found himself in a trick bag there.
Yes, but now with the storyline, you know, the Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill characters were all supposed to be like 35 years older than they had been in the first three films. So that was the timeline. So he's he's isolated from the world. He's trying to kind of just hide from everything. So Mark Hamill, looking very weather beaten and older, and literally battle scarred, fits the character to a T. And let's face it, in that universe, everybody's looks, it's an interesting look. It's one of the things I kind of love about the Star Wars universe is the one thing they never really make fun of how people look or creatures with seven noses or anything like that, because that's just the world they live in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was the thing, that the bar scene in Star Wars was the most revolutionary piece of filmmaking of that era.
Yeah. And you'll love this movie because they always have to have some sort of obligatory bar or tavern. And this time out, it's a big casino.
Yeah, well,
they find some really cool ways to gamble, apparently, on the planet.
it was a way to make to sort of enter into the era of to make the bizarre, and I mean bizarre, B-A-Z, an acceptable thing. That people get together and they drink and they break bread and they do other, even when they don't look and act alike.
Yeah,
and you didn't see a lot of that in film.
No, and you're right. That's something that's been picked up now by lots of other, Guardians of the Galaxy type franchises. But Star Wars was way, way ahead of that curve.
Well, 3.5 stars for The Last Jedi. And spoiler alert, because I didn't know that Han Solo bought it in the last one. So I never got to the end of it, I guess.
Or did he?
Got to it? No.
I never got to that part. I mean, I've seen that. I've seen pieces of that. You know how it's on cable. And I want to pick it up where I was.
Because you never really get that.
And I keep seeing the same scene over and over and over again.
I know that feeling.
You got to watch that.
Well, Adam Driver plays Kylo Ren, who is the son of Princess Leia and Han Solo, who is now battling to decide if he's going to be Kylo Ren or Ben Solo. Will he succumb to the dark side?
Oh.
Even put on a shiny mask. Who knows?
Is that why they say choose your side in the trailer?
Right. It's all about that force.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Is it with us? We need the force. The farce is definitely with us.
The farce is with us. We need the force.
Sit! Sit!
I'd never advocate anybody spooking a horse, but if no animals had been injured in the making of that, and Roy Moore's horse had taken a tumble, or just thrown his rider, I guess would have been better, out of good taste.
Here is Judy Pollack standing by with the WGN News in 2 minutes. Rob Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Tom Skilling is joining us, and Tom Skilling is disappointing Daddy today.
Oh, no.
Say that.
Because of the chill out there?
Because of the ice coldness of what's going on.
My puffy jacket wasn't enough for today. I had to swap up.
Well,
I'll
say
chill that's getting us, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. And, you think about it, when posterity looks back on this date, they'll see a high of 31. Because that's what will go into the record books for the calendar day, because that happened at midnight. But in fact, we've actually, during most of the hours that most of us have been awake, have been in the 20s, and we're running about 16 degrees colder than yesterday. And at that level, this is the coolest daytime afternoon set of readings that we've seen since way back in February. So that was something that was pointed out to me by Bill Snyder yesterday.
Bill Snyder. I met him at the party,
yes,
by the way.
He enjoyed meeting you, too.
Now, and, I want to say that Bill Snyder seems like a very smart man.
Yeah,
well,
because we decided that we are against you, and we're against Anna.
I know.
in this battle of hot versus cold.
I know. We kind of take sides here in the office, yeah, too. We have Paul Merzluck, who's a veteran Weather Service retiree who works with us part time. He loves snow. I love snow. Who else does in this office? And one of our interns, Joy, loves snow. So there are some of us. No, she doesn't. It's Matt, the other intern.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So
I'm just impressed to know the interns' names. I like the way that's working.
Tom Skilling. Yeah. Know them. Yes.
Yeah. So we take sides over here too. But I guess we've got to put you in the warm. Now, what about you, Anna?
I love summer the most, but I do like some snow.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
We have our sled next to the door, and my little one is dying to go sledding.
Right.
The sled's got rust on the skidder right now.
It hasn't had any opportunities.
I know.
It doesn't have many miles on it.
Yeah, it's kind of like this, you know, the skates you put on. People will write me and say, look, we set up a skating rink in our backyard. Will this be a winter in which we'll support it? And, you know, with these flip-flop winters where you get, 2 weeks of cold and 2 weeks above normal, it's kind of hard to know how to advise. But it used to be, you know, back in the 70s, you put a backyard skating rink in and you had instant ice. It mm-hmm. was, those winters were barbaric. In fact, you know, the winters of the 70s were worse than any other set of winters decadally that we've had in this area. And we have records that go back to 1870.
Right.
So
I mean,
100 years.
I think those of us who lived here in that period of time, there is a post-traumatic stress reality to that. I don't mean to belittle PTSD, but I think the people, you know, those were awful. If you were in a certain age range, that's what you thought winter was.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? You know, for those of us who are, say, at our age range, 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. We remember the winters of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and each of those got progressively colder and progressively snowier. So our sense of what winters were like is different than, say, folks who went back to the Depression years who remember the warmth of the 1930s and those warm 19 years.
Or our kids who, you know, grew up, they had it easy.
No, it's
been
mild.
You know, they have a 60-degree day in January. What the hell's that all about?
We didn't know those.
It really is interesting, though, because we frame our view of what's going on based on our own personal experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had to walk to school for 3 miles in the snow.
Yes, it
uphill.
Wasn't in snow. You had to take your Uber to school in 60-degree winters.
That's right.
You guys complain like.
Or call Lyft, your Lyft pickup.
That's how you had to do that.
Yeah.
I had to wait for my Uber at Terminal 3.
Oh,
really,
my
obnoxious.
Word. Tell you,
the worst.
Have food delivered so you wouldn't have to go out and get
that's
it.
Exactly
right.
At
Grubhub.
Right.
You took Grubhub 17 minutes as opposed to 15 when
that's
they said
it.
They
so
right
mad. You
know,
it's true. You can't avoid the cold now a lot more than you used to be able to.
I know.
You could stay in your house and have everything delivered.
You can. Isn't it? It's amazing, isn't it, what has happened with these little devices we walk around with?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you're welcome, people.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, we've sacrificed some things with those, too. Our privacy, and...
It was overrated.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I don't know. Ask anybody who got caught with pictures on theirs,
What do you mean? We have direct access to the president at all times. It's such a beautiful
That's true. But, you know, you know more about this than I do. Haven't there been surveys of the young who say that... you know, they don't think of freedoms the way we did.
No.
Because they're used to talking to each other on Facebook and having these social platforms.
Well, the concept of privacy is totally different than it was for us when privacy was kind of drilled in. Now, that's good and bad.
I mean,
privacy also led to a lot of behind-closed-door bad behavior.
Yes.
Not just in the Me Too thing, which is the most current example of that, but there have been a lot of other things along the way. But you know, now that it is a much more open dialogue than it has ever been. Everybody's voice can be heard. What is interesting is it's telling us how the human instinct tilts, though, because the voices that get replicated, not necessarily agreed with, but replicated, but you know, passed on, mm-hmm. are the extreme voices. And some people are taking that for entertainment. Some people are taking that because they agree with it. And finally, somebody else is saying what they've always thought. But there's a lot of reasons for it. But those are getting outsized amplification on the wings.
That's true.
So you're getting that. So it now feels like the culture is no longer what you thought it was. And that's very, I think it's disconcerting to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. I think it is too. And I also, we can kind of tailor the news to what we wish to hear.
Sure.
You know, you can kind of find the news that bends the way you want it to bend.
Right.
But you know, by the same token, we've had this amazing explosion of information. I think, you know, myself as a weather forecast, somebody who was interested in weather as a youth. The only thing, you got one weather map, one little weather map in the newspaper a day. Today you go on the internet and read from hurricane experts and all this kind of stuff. And that's true of any level of any area of interest that anybody would have today, a young person. There's
it's just
an amazing wealth of information out there.
It's such an equalizer in a lot of ways because we all have access to the information. I think that's a great thing.
It is.
I sit there, though. We have Alexa in our household. I'm sorry. I just said the word. Are we not supposed to say the word? Because it starts. Sorry. Can't take that back. But my daughter always, she'll just ask all the questions of her and not us anymore. And so you don't even need the parents anymore. It's like,
no,
she just says, hey, what's the weather going to be? Hey, play the song from Wicked,
right,
or the song from Frozen.
Or
what's the princess?
Or how about
with the
play WGN radio? You can do that.
Right.
Yeah. You can say that.
Yeah.
But it's like there's so much information at your fingertips.
Oh, you can ask Siri and, you know, things. I always love I love these people that tell Siri to respond to ridiculous questions.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Siri, why? And then and then you listen to, you know, the response. What's the answer to why?
The reason that we don't say those things is because it's triggering people's devices when they're listening to us around them.
Yeah.
And that's the
one.
That's
annoying.
That is the funniest thing about it. Now, Siri's got a trigger word before her name, so that's good.
Right.
Yes.
But the other one,
it just
doesn't.
Alyssa
just
with an
activates.
X does not have that.
Yeah.
And so they might want to put a trigger word in front, but they've already kind of rolled it, so that's a little late for that. But I just wonder what happens to families with kids with that name.
Or a dog with that.
Right.
Good point. I hadn't even thought about that.
Can you change the name?
Or someone in the house has got that name.
Of the kid or the...
Yeah, you have to change the name of the kid now.
Sometimes you get close to it. Like, we have friends who have a kid named Lexi, mm-hmm. and that also can trigger.
Yeah.
So
that's what... That, I don't know.
First world problems.
These are real problems.
Right. Well, these are not going to be problems after the nuclear winter, so we're not going to have to worry about that.
That's why we talk about them now.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about when you call one of these big companies and you get one of these automated answering systems?
I had this over the weekend. Overnight last night. I was trying to get something fixed on my cable.
Yeah,
and,
exact. Great example.
And I'm just trying to talk to that thing, and I'm like, listen, just give me somebody.
No,
right,
you have
please.
To just scream manager. Manager, manager, manager.
That's a good idea.
Or representative. I always say representative.
I want even higher up. I want to go straight to the general manager.
CEO.
CEO.
Right. Yeah. Can't you see getting the CEO of the company and
saying, get Bob Iger on the phone. Get Jeff Bezos on the blower.
And then you pretend that you talked to three people already and no one's helped you. And
Right. I know. And I had a lady from overseas who couldn't be less interested in what my issue was. And she was like, well, I can't help you with that. I'm like, what do you mean you can't help me with that?
Your
it's your problem.
Customer service.
Yeah. All right, anyway, all right, we got to run, but thank you very much, Tom.
Guys,
will see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. A little clipper coming in, mainly an afternoon thing.
We'll talk about it right in the precipice of that tomorrow.
Right,
thank you very much.
See
Tom.
You guys.
Appreciate
Bye,
it. All right, here is Violetta. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlasis on 720 WGN.
It's Tuesdays, and our favorite alderman is here.
That is correct. Well, he's our favorite alderman because he's also our alderman. And let me just say, because we haven't had a chance to publicly thank you for this yet.
Mm-hmm.
And we publicly thanked you, but with you in presence, you helped us so much with our Toys for Tots. Thousands of toys raised and thousands of dollars raised as well. People were just dropping money off left and right, and we're just handing it immediately to the Marines because I didn't want anybody touching it. except for the Marines.
That's wise.
That we're here for Toys for Tots. We did what will be a week and a half ago, essentially. Yeah. And it was your help to get us to be able to be set up here on Pioneer Court. And thank you so much, Alderman Brendan Riley.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure to help, and congratulations. I know it was really successful. So thank you guys for hosting the event.
Thank you. All right. Let's talk about the Vehicular Terrorism Task Force in Chicago. I would like to know, is this about cars driving up on the street and doing damage to people or trucks or whatever? Or is this about carjacking?
No, it's related to Homeland Security and trying to prevent what we've seen play out in London and in New York and other cities around the world. I think it's a new trend, and any city that has a lot of wide open public right of way needs to think very carefully about how we plan for these things. So although I don't always agree with Alderman Burke and some of his ordinances, I do think that this is a good initiative. I don't want the general public to think that without this task force, there isn't a lot of planning that's already going on. The Office of Emergency Management and Communications spends a lot of time with Homeland Security day in, day out, game planning for stuff like this. But having some permanent installations to permanently secure these places, I think, makes a lot of sense.
You've seen a lot of those go up over recent years. This would, what, multiply that by a factor of two or more? Or is there another part of this where...
Well, I mean, I think that we'll have to see what the task force recommends, but I got to figure that the installation of removable bollards will be a big component of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, explain what that would mean for... people.
So you actually can see these in the loop near the Federal Reserve Bank and other places. These are large, thick pillars. They're only about maybe 3 or 4 feet tall, and you can literally screw them deep into the pavement. And if you want to remove those for certain special events or whatever, that can be done, and then you just cap that hole. But it's a way to...
Because that's an ankle turner right there. I just thought about that. A guy with weak ankles thinks about that all the time.
Yeah, it's a lawsuit for sure.
Yeah.
But those things are very effective. They're not tremendously expensive, and it doesn't require a permanent fix that's there forever.
Did I see those when I was downtown for the Thanksgiving parade? It seemed like they had really secured the perimeter of that parade in a way that made you feel really safe.
Yes, you can drop off special event planters and bollards that aren't terribly attractive. The idea is we could actually kind of meet somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. and have a semi-permanent bollard that you can screw in and screw out. It also involves how you police the right-of-way. At certain locations where you have a lot of attractive, wide-open space, that's an area where you want to position squad cars or other kinds of movable barriers, trucks, that kind of stuff. So I think a task force convening around this and making this a single purpose is a good initiative. It makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure it'll come up with some excellent recommendations for us to implement.
Well, it was interesting when right in the aftermath of the New York attack, not this most recent one, but the one a few weeks ago, on the Lower West Side, where there was a guy got on the bike path.
I was sitting here with
right,
you
when that happened. Right.
That's right.
And we noticed a change in behavior, police and city protocols, for weeks after that.
And actually that day, right out your booth window,
we
had squads up on the sidewalk here preventing people from being able to access that.
Right, because this is a large plaza here, and one would imagine that that's got its own,
sure.
that's its own deal.
Sure.
So, you're right. I mean, we do have to think about that. Thankfully, Chicago has not experienced this to date.
That's right.
And we're, hopeful that we don't, but... We have to be prepared. Well, now, in terms of, if I could just move over to the CTA for a second, obviously we had this guy yesterday at the Port Authority in New York,
mm-hmm.
Who blew up his pants, which luckily that was his, that's as far as that got.
Yeah,
but
God.
That was certainly not the intention.
No.
And I have noticed that security at the CTA is very different than it used to be, at least counterterrorism security. People get on and want to steal something from somebody or armed robber or whatever. That's a very difficult, unless you put metal detectors, that's going to be really, really, really difficult to be able to police. But I feel pretty good. I know people laugh when I say I feel good about the CTA, but I do, actually.
People don't picture you on the CTA.
I know they don't, but I got my Venture card, I do. And I live downtown, and it is really a better way, especially when the weather sucks.
Sure.
It's a better way to get around. I feel like it's such a vast improvement from when I was a kid. that it's that, and there's a lot of other security, passive security measures that we don't think about and don't know about.
Really. That's right.
Well, and that was one of the things that started to be discussed in the wake of what happened in New York with the guy driving into the bike path, the tragic day there, and killing so many people. That is, should there be a no rent list? We have a no fly list. Should you not be able to rent, you know, large trucks and that kind of thing in an area? Is there any work being done in that way?
Well, OEMC is already, Justin, I think this week, been taking a look at implementing a list like that. That's something that New York City, it's sad to say, that was an effort well underway in that city when that event occurred. But it does make good practical sense, and I know that the city's OEMC folks are working with Homeland Security to try and assemble that kind of list. I know it's hard to implement, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot about that from the task force, but I know that that will be a part of that conversation. And when it comes to the CTA generally, what Ro is saying is true. It's changed a lot. We have a long way to go on improving security on our CTA for the average commuter. We have still far too much crime occurring on and around it. But when it comes to Homeland Security, a few years back, you never would have seen sniffing dogs walking through all these concourses. That is now a regular occurrence. You also occasionally see officers with long guns. Mm-hmm. That's not something you used to see a few years back.
Right.
So we are sending the message. We're taking this seriously. You've seen upgrades to security surveillance cameras in the CTA stations. That's for a specific purpose. And so there is a lot of effort going into this right now.
Oh, man, when you see the like you mystically said, for a specific purpose, when some bad guy does something downtown, and then he decides to use the CTA as a getaway, which is since I've had the CTA, that has been the thing. You get the most unbelievably detailed pictures of them from the CTA.
You could frame those photos.
You could.
So clear.
I mean, that's the thing. And I always wonder when people do that, and then they go home at night. And they go, "Well, I got away with it." And then they look at TV, and there is like a picture. It's like the best headshot ever of somebody.
It's crystal clear,
right? And
right?
It's like
it's better than your ID photo,
right? There's no way that somebody who knows that person doesn't know that's that person.
You know, those enhanced cameras actually led to a lot of arrests.
I'll bet
they don't prevent those types of crimes from occurring, but man, do we have a pretty good success rate in catching folks.
I would imagine that is the case. All right, stay right here. I want to ask you about two other things that are happening in the city. I think are very interesting because you do have daylight robberies and carjackings on the rise. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about what that's about, and this the banning of businesses that will not accept cash. Mm. Those two stories are kind of related in their own way. We'll talk about that with Alderman Brendan Riley on Tuesdays with Brendan. But first, we have got WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Here's Violetta.
Flashback to the 80s and laugh along with The Goldbergs, starring Chicago's very own Jeff Garlin. Weeknights at 10:30 and 11 on WGN-TV.
All right. Brendan Riley is here. He's an alderman. Tuesdays with Brendan. And we like to talk about the city and things that are working and things that... This is the city that works, by the way. We never say that anymore.
Why don't we say that anymore, Brendan?
It works most days. It works most days.
That's what she said at the airport. Welcome to Chicago, the city that works most days.
Most days. Yeah. Kind of works.
Hey, please use the stairs. Works. The elevator's out of service.
I did see the mayor was on the Stephen Colbert last night.
Oh, I did miss that.
And it was interesting because he was a very funny color of orange. That was they made him up. You know, sometimes you got to have the right makeup artist because...
he can warm you up too much and you look like a Cheeto.
Yes, and that's what he did. He looked like a Cheeto. And he had his shirt collar was kind of below... They didn't dress him properly. And that's on CBS's fault, because when you go in there, no matter what you're wearing, there are tricks that they can use to make it pop on television and make it, make you look a little bit better. But maybe he's one of those guys that don't touch me. Well, we got to put some makeup on. All right. And they do like the first thing and you do it quickly and then it was over. So he, but it was interesting. I got a sense of something last night.
What's that?
As much as the mayor, this is the job that he says is the job he always wanted and his favorite job and all that. And I believe that because I think being mayor of Chicago is a pretty cool job. I mean, it's hard. It's an impossibility, but if you do truly love the city, and I believe the mayor does, mm-hmm. I don't dispute that. Mm-hmm. That, and you're capable of doing it, then I think it's a very it's a great job to have. I believe when he says it. However, I had the sense last night watching him thinking, I wonder if he thinks he can run for president.
Hmm.
Huh.
Hmm.
Well, first of all, I bring my hair and makeup, folks, with me wherever I go, so I'm never going to have that problem.
That's why you always look so sharp. I wonder, Brendan.
Yeah, right.
All right. What are we doing about daylight robberies and carjackings?
Well, those are two separate issues. With regard to the increase in carjackings, we need to beef up our traffic services division in the police department. And this is something that actually came up during the budget hearings last month down at City Hall. We've put a lot of resource in the police department into beat cops and into tactical units and gang crime, but I think to the detriment of traffic services. We simply don't have a lot of cops rolling around pulling over vehicles for minor infractions. That's honestly, that's how you actually catch a lot of folks. You actually have people being, you know, cops out there pulling over folks for infractions, but interviewing with them and talking to them and taking a look at what's in the car.
So the street stop, the whole concept of the initial contact.
That's it. Having an initial contact. There's a lot less of that in traffic services now. There are fewer resources in that division. That's changing very quickly because of these trends and these statistics. But that has been a vulnerability that we've seen, I think, here in the city for the last two budgets.
Do you think it's just a sort of a criminal cultural change that the carjacking is a fairly quick and easy way to get an asset that you can use either to sell off or to use in the commission of another crime and just keep moving around? No. Because the problem is with now most cars have some form of tracking, and there's a way to track license plates and things like that. So bad guys only want a car for a very short period of time.
That's right. Unless they're taking it to a chop shop and tearing it up and selling it off. But
it's less of the case now, I think.
Yeah. Here, it's committing a lot of other crimes.
Yeah. All right. And the other thing, too, the banning of cashless businesses. I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm not, I generally understand the sponsor, again, Alderman Burke, I understand his intent. I think that's eventually down the road the inevitability. I think we will eventually get to a cashless society. But in the meantime, there are an awful lot of folks that fall through the cracks today that don't have ready access to credit cards, may not maintain a bank account, and live paycheck to paycheck. So I don't think you can go completely cashless because you do leave a lot of folks behind. I'm happy to learn more about that ordinance, but typically I prefer that kind of policy be set at the state level rather than at the local level.
There is a theory that the more we move away from cash in the society, the more street crime goes up because people who would be street hustling and looking for it's less effective to street hustle for cash than it used to be because there is less cash.
Yeah, most people can actually say, I only have a credit card.
Right, and so it has turned to now trying to steal things of value or to release you of the things of value that they can get, and it's an interesting slide cause and effect that's happening here. Mm-hmm. So. All right. Well, we'll just have to see what happens here. I just like the idea. I do like the cashless part of getting out of the truck. I don't even know how to use.
Doesn't it cost like $5 to buy a little square that you put on your phone to swipe cards?
I mean, yes. Maybe in theory.
Maybe so that's where panhandling's heading too. I don't know.
Yeah.
That would work. That could totally work.
I could cube. Yeah. Okay. I suppose that's the case. All right, Alderman. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Alderman Brendan Riley. There's a chicken in every pot as far as he is concerned. Although I'm going to tell you, I think there is something to be said about that deal with the mayor. I watched him last night, and he seemed to be very comfortable in that spotlight. And I just wondered for a second, is he going to run for president in 2020? Just a thought. I know he would say, "Perish the thought, people." It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Michael Monaco is an attorney at law, and he is joining us right now in the studio, and there are many things that we need to discuss with him.
Hello, Ro. Hello, Anna.
Hi there, Mike.
How are you?
All right.
You know and love Mike you see him on television about once a week walking one of his clients in or out of the federal court building here.
He's the sharp-dressed man on the left.
Who often says, this is a miscarriage of justice.
This is a miscarriage. Thank you very much, bro.
That's right.
You've been listening. Thank you.
If I were you, that's what I would be saying, too. All right, let me ask you about this. Is Jay Sekulow is a member of Donald Trump's personal
personal lawyer.
The legal team. Now, what's interesting about Jay Sekulow, Jay Sekulow has been around for a number of years. He doesn't seem to age, which is also a little concerning to me.
Yeah.
He's been on television. He's a conservative attorney, and he runs a foundation which protects conservative issues legally.
Right.
Now, there was an interesting piece in, I believe it was the New York Times. Don't quote me on that. It was either Atlantic or New York Times. Mm-hmm. About a month and a half ago, about the Sekulow family's involvement in that foundation. Now, everybody in that foundation is a family member.
Well.
Many of them are family members. But you can read that and choose for yourself what you think about all of this. But he is... he's been around a long time. He's gigantically sort of a Fox News contributor. I don't know if
he's on a lot
by definition,
sure.
But he's on a ton there. And he very well articulates his argument about why there needs to be more conservative judicial watch and things like that, which I think is the name of one of his foundations. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now. What is he asking for here? I need to understand. He wants a special counsel for the special counsel.
Yeah, he wants a special prosecutor to investigate the FBI and the Department of Justice conflicts of interest, I think is what he's interested in, is what he's talking about.
Okay.
Conflicts of interest.
He made it very clear that it has nothing to do with Bob Mueller and that Sekulow said he's not considering firing Bob Mueller. This is separate from him and his investigation of the Russian interaction.
Well, okay, that's what he said, but he's asking for somebody to investigate the Department of Justice and the special counsel's investigators. In other words, investigate the investigators.
Right.
Because they're claiming that there were conflicts between the investigators and the investigation.
First of all, is this something that can be done?
Oh, yeah, it could be done.
Okay, let me ask you this. If that can be done, can you get a special counsel to investigate? The special counsel is investigating the special counsel.
Exactly right. It's weird. That's why.
How deep does this go?
I can't imagine they're going to sign somebody up to do this.
You can't imagine.
Well, maybe they will.
In
okay,
this world?
Maybe
are
they
you,
will.
I
take it back.
What year did you wake up in?
Take it back. It's possible, but unlikely, that they're going to actually call a special prosecutor to investigate the FBI. I can't. Well. Who knows?
But talk about how he's saying why we got here, why he's calling for this. The first thing was very well publicized, the FBI agent who was reassigned to HR because of his, you know,
texting his girlfriend.
Right. That was unfortunate. But this other thing involves Bruce Orr.
A senior Justice Department official. I almost said senior Jew. Like, that's something that Mrs. Moore would say.
Roy
Moore's wife.
Senior.
Yeah. Bruce Orr is a senior Justice Department official who was demoted amid investigation into his contacts with Fusion GPS, the opposition research firm, which, by the way, did have something to do with the dossier.
And it hired, and his wife worked for them.
His wife worked for Fusion GPS.
Right.
So he was demoted after they found out that wasn't disclosed.
So the fact that his wife worked for Fusion GPS, although she's apparently, the reports are that she's highly regarded as a Russian, a person with scholarly information about Russia.
Expert on Russian.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that he did not disclose that information, that she was working for the Fusion GPS when he knows they were related to the dossier. And they were involved in that famous dossier that's still hanging around there. Now, the thing is, this dossier has been out there since the campaign.
Right. Is it enough, I guess, is the question. A lot of people are saying everyone brings their own political bias to the job, but are you handling it seriously? Are you allowing justice to be served despite what you bring to the job, despite the fact that your wife works there, or despite the fact that you've text your girlfriend during some kind of a debate having Trump feelings or anti-Trump feelings? Can you still do the job?
Right. That's the question. It's a good question. I, the fact that his wife worked for Fusion GPS, I suppose, is a bigger issue than just sending text to one another. Here you've got an employment situation where she's making money, I guess, on Fusion GPS. So I assume people are going to be questioning the fact, but the fellow just lost his, he was just demoted, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer doing what he was previously doing. Now he's in investigating drugs, I guess.
Right.
Organized crime drugs.
So Sekulow is saying, how many others will there be found, and should we be able to investigate all of the members of the team and see how many conflicts there are? Is that something you think would be warranted at this time, Mike?
No. I mean, I don't believe it's warranted, but it's certainly questionable, and it's unfortunate that Orr was doing that, and it sort of makes sense that he's no longer in that position, because this is going to be as highly investigated a case as ever, and both in terms of the investigators and the things they're investigating. That these, who's ever doing this case, they are going to be highly investigated.
Well, because, and perhaps with good reason. I mean, the consequences of this are gigantic.
Right.
And if there is a toppling legally of the, I mean, I would hate to think about an illegal toppling. But if the president is impeached or removed from office because of legal action, I mean, it creates a huge problem in America. You already saw what the market did just on 20 minutes of news last week, that it was concerned about it. I think what's interesting is what Steve Bannon said yesterday in his Roy Moore, at that Roy Moore event last night, was, you just watch and see what happens after they get their tax cut. What they're going to do to this president, what Republicans are going to do to this president, and hell hath no fury.
Meaning they'll turn on him at that point?
Yes, that they will turn
it's
on
over.
Him.
That may be true.
Yeah. Oh, I thought when Steve Bannon said it, I thought that's absolutely right. But
that may be true.
Puppet master.
Then what I also don't quite get, though, is there was a moment, I'm watching this last night, I thought, you know what? I wonder, wouldn't it be great to learn what Steve Bannon's real motivation is here? And I started to think about a circumstance in which, after there has been a total gutting of the Republican Party, an internal internecine war of conservative Republicans against Trump Republicans against moderate Republicans, and the whole thing just gets gutted out, he stands up and goes, "I gotcha." And he turns out the whole time he was a liberal activist. I mean, it's all I could think of was like, you know, where is that? We're gotcha. There you go. Because he's playing this so well. I mean, listen, he was one of the producers of Seinfeld. If there's ever a guy.
Yeah,
you know that, you know, he was a Hollywood guy. He was a weird dude, but he was a Hollywood guy.
It's true.
You know, and then it makes me start to think about this whole thing. It starts me thinking about Russia again, and you know, who are the people who are with the Russians and not with the Russians. I saw this last night on TV for the first time. I just want to play this for you because this is absolutely startling. Roy Moore earlier this year. I know the voting's already started and he's already won, so I'm just saying this now. This has nothing to do.
You're
with
not reporting that. You're just guessing about.
I'm just guessing that there's something. This is just something that made me feel a little queasy inside when I saw it. Roy Moore was interviewed by an international reporter about Vladimir Putin earlier in the year, right? Because the world is wondering if the United States has fallen under the spell of Vladimir Putin. That is a concern. That Vladimir Putin may have influenced, they believe, more so than in America, in Europe, they believe that Vladimir Putin influenced this election and that this is all part of...
That's what they're investigating. Well, that's what Mueller's investigating.
That he influenced Brexit and this, and that he's whipping up, he's fomenting this populist revolution around the world because it benefits him, because it breaks down all these other economic realities of and supports in countries like ours. So, there was this with Roy Moore, who, you know, when you look at Roy Moore, you think, well, he's a goofy guy, right? He, like, lives in another century, and he doesn't seem like a sophisticate of any type, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that, that's fair. I think he would almost, well, I mean, he rode his own horse to the election today, to the polls, right, to vote for himself. Yeah. I mean, we're not kidding. He really did that.
And he carried a gun on stage during
he waved a gun,
campaign event.
But I want to go back to this because I've heard this interview a little bit, but I never heard the end of it. And just listen to this.
We promote a lot of bad things, you know?
Like?
Same-sex marriage.
That's the very argument that Vladimir Putin makes.
Well, then maybe Putin is right. Maybe he's more kin to me than I know.
What would you say to him?
Здравствуйте, как вы поживаете сегодня?
What?
There you go. So he can speak Russian.
Right.
Interesting.
So much for the sophistication argument.
Yeah.
But he's not sophisticated.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Just a little something to think about.
That's something to think about.
Здравствуйте, как вы поживаете сегодня?
What? It sounds really natural.
To yes, it does
like it's
not
got a perfect accent.
Sound right. It's not,
not that I know what that perfect accent is, but it doesn't sound like an American.
It's speaking. Not a Southern accent doing it.
That's what creeps me out.
Doesn't that isn't that weird?
It's so weird.
It's very weird.
Just out of nowhere, the
Violetta. What does that mean? Do you even understand what that was?
No, but it sounds like it's really fluent.
The dude's riding a horse around today, and then he throws that into an interview out of nowhere.
Здравствуйте, как вы поживаете сегодня?
Why hasn't that come out?
That's weird
about this guy in the whole vetting before the election thing. Does anyone know the answer?
Well, it was because it was what he had said earlier in the cut, which got all the attention. Which was that, you know, well, it was about the gay marriage thing. That sounds like Vladimir Putin. Well, maybe we're more akin. And then we find out that he's literally Vladimir Putin's brother-in-law who was, you know, trained to come into the United States and try to blow up the Alabama Supreme Court.
This is like the end of a conspiracy movie when it's all unfolding. At
right.
The very end.
I know. I like need to know what that means.
And then he starts speaking Russian, and then there's subtitles underneath it. You go, oh, my God.
Wasn't that Kevin Costner was in that movie, I think.
Right. Like CIA flick.
Yeah.
I mean, how about that?
Yeah. How about that?
That's interesting.
Shocking.
Now, I know that he's... you know, supporters are going to go, well, that just proves he's a really smart guy and he's on top of things. And, you know, and the Russians might be onto a few things. And people who believe that also, you know, believe in genocide, essentially. So that is just, you know, whether you know it yet or not, you are supporting the side of ethnic cleansing in a situation.
He's saying he learned Russian at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point.
Oh, dear God.
That's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Heard that story once or twice.
I know, right? There's a little more there for a few more questions you'd want to ask about that, I would think.
We just need to know what he said.
Right.
Vlad, hold on. We've got your back.
Exactly right. And, yeah, changing language. Right.
We're with you.
Vlad's watching on TV just nodding his head.
What would I say to you? Yeah. We're with you. I've got your... Don't worry, the plan... We're going exactly to plan.
Yes, the chickens are in the coop or whatever. Some code, you know? Like, what?
Well, everybody knows when you're talking about someone, you change the language, right?
Right? Well, yes. In your world, that is correct. Yeah.
Definitely correct.
Yeah.
You know it's awkward when you... That's right.
Start out by that.
Right. That is, yeah.
Some listeners texting and saying he was just saying, hi, how are you today?
That's good enough.
Right. Which is code.
Right, that is code for, yes, going exactly to plan.
We're entering stage 3.
Yes. Right. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate your
Take
time.
Care. Happy
Mike
holiday.
Monica, thank you. Oh, really? Exactly. Okay, great. Merry Christmas, what you're supposed to say. Merry, even though
Don't
it's the first
know?
Day of Hanukkah. Yeah. Merry effing Christmas!
You know what's funny?
It's the first day of Hanukkah, that's right.
Yeah, it is.
Donald Trump's Twitter page has Merry Christmas as his background picture.
Of course.
People holding up signs in his crowd in
yes.
his rallies.
And now I do wonder this: what about the what? I would like to also wish a happy Hanukkah to the Moore's lawyer,
the one Jewish person they know.
The one Jewish person they know. I'd like to wish a happy Hanukkah to them as well. All right, thank you. Here is Violetta with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots. Friends, Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
That special time of day right now, time we look forward to.
Every day
Every
at this
day.
Very time because it's the 5 o'clock hour and therefore...
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5,
let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All All right, we shall do that. Checking in at
number five.
You know, Roy Moore is not just the only person that's been accused of terminal creepiness.
No, he's not. We've had quite a parade of different people.
Yes, we have.
It was one point, what, 3 in 3 days we had
in
succession.
Yeah. But here's one. Kentucky, there's a state rep, Dan Johnson. He's a Republican. He denied allegations that he actually sexually assaulted a 17-year-old girl. Now, she told a Louisville radio station that Johnson was her preacher years ago and that he had assaulted her after she went to sleep at a New Year's Eve party. So what did the state rep do? He held a press conference today from the pulpit of the Heart of the Fire Church to counter the accusations. And the press conference began with the state rep and his supporters singing a hymn about the baby Jesus.
Let's do this. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord.
Okay.
All right.
He's a preacher.
He's a preacher, and it's Christmas, and this is what's
bad. That's one way to get started.
Well, but this is a press conference about a sexual assault.
Oh, it's a press conference?
That's yes.
Only
this is not a church. I mean, it's church. It's happening at a church. You can have church any time, right? But it's an odd way to start a press conference about sexual
Agreed.
Assault. So here he is pleading his case.
You know, those people that run for office, hopefully, are just real people. And there's no perfect people. So there's going to be things if you go through the time somebody was born, and that's what's happened in my life in this situation till this date. You know, there's things that aren't perfect, and that's a fact. This allegation concerning this lady, this young girl, absolutely has no merit. There is no anything that I've heard. As a matter of fact, some of this I heard yesterday for the first time as I read this story.
So he's saying he's denying the charges.
But he's not perfect.
He's not perfect.
Would you like to tell us what was it that wasn't perfect? Anybody know?
I know that everyone that's here today probably are interested in every single thing that's probably in this article. Maybe a lot of you are. Maybe you're just specifically on one particular thing. And I'll do my best to answer those questions. But I will tell you this, that... I'm not standing here today to step down or resign or do anything like that.
Oh.
All right.
Staying put.
Yes. Now, that was in Kentucky today. Mm-hmm. But last night in Alabama, this
that
may have been
one of the
highlights of this whole Roy Moore moment, at least for me, for this reporter, as we like to say. Because I really enjoyed this is Mrs. Moore making the final argument for why the Moores are really open-minded.
Fake news would tell you that we don't care for Jews. I tell you all this because I've seen it all, so I just want to set the record straight while they're here. One of our attorneys is a Jew. We have very close friends that are Jewish and rabbis, and we also fellowship with them.
Yeah, slow clap.
Slow clap.
I think that's worthy of it.
And then there's people kind of laughing in the background, so I don't know if they're laughing at her addressing the media or the fake news or laughing at, you have a Jew?
Lawyer?
As a lawyer?
A Jew lawyer? Jew lawyer. May I suggest that she get one? Get another one. Maybe two.
Might need them. I don't know, just a bizarre defense, right? to bring it up in that way. Really weird. But that wasn't the weirdest thing that happened at that particular campaign rally, the final argument, as you put it.
Yeah, what was it? What did you think was the weirdest thing?
Well, when his veteran friend who served in Vietnam with him described how they accidentally fell upon a brothel and they accidentally realized that some of the kids, the girls there might have been underage, and that Roy Moore, being of good character and sound judgment, decided that we can't stay here. So that sort of speaking up for him.
And wasn't his service and time, you know, serving part of the reason why he might have had interest in younger girls, because everyone else was taken when he came back?
That's right. That's exactly what he said when I came back.
All right.
Well,
we have that. At least there's a defense. There's a defense. Although, you know, she still did say this.
One of our attorneys is a Jew.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
Not Jewish, but a Jew.
A Jew. Yeah.
Boy.
Okay. Can we? All right. Let's move on.
What are the exit polls showing at this point? Because they close, and the polls close there in Alabama in less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
No, in 45 minutes. So.
Yep. Yeah. We'll probably start the.
Do you think it'll be early night?
It's going to be an early night. It's going to be an early night.
It's interesting how this is eye opening to figure out how the rest of the United States kind of lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Where you take a horse to go to the polls, as Roy Moore did today, took his horse, didn't drive.
But he's done that in other elections, he said. So that's why it was sort of his good luck thing. And he certainly got a lot of TV coverage for it.
Yeah.
This is a long ride in.
Well, he and his wife riding off, and you know, like over the hill. I mean, it was really, I mean, it is, you know, this is this idea of rejection of modernity. That's one of the philosophies here, is that rejecting all of the changes and progress, and you want to go back to a different time in America, even a time that wasn't so pretty, but they want to go back. And this is the best way to articulate it, I think, is to get on your horse and ride away. Get on your high horse.
Well, people do live differently in Alaska. They,
yes,
you know, bring sled dogs to the drive through, and I have a friend in that's gone to a drive through McDonald's on a horse.
Mm-hmm. Where is that?
In Oregon. And Russia, probably.
Mm-hmm. That's Roy Moore, by the way, too.
He was not bare chested, as we've seen Putin do the whole horseback riding thing. This was fully clothed. Looking like a cowboy.
We find out that Roy Moore is actually fluent in Russian. We found that out.
Well, he's not fluent. He said that he learned some at West Point, and that's really all he knows how to say, to be fair. He did say that was... But it was it sounded like a very good accent. It didn't sound like what you would think an American would sound like saying it.
Здравствуйте, как вы поживаете сегодня?
My dad speaks Russian, and he actually texts me. He says all it says is, hi, how are you doing today? So
there you go.
Maybe he just practiced that sentence.
I'd like to see a road movie, a road show, like one of those, like getting across America and trying to outrun the law, handcuffed to each other between your dad and Roy Moore. I think that would be really a very fun... It'd be a fun moment.
Well, for people who follow The Americans, that show that our producer Jeff Garland says is the best ever.
It's a great show.
Americans embedded here and speak Russian, but you never know it. And then all of a sudden.
Right. There are actually Russians embedded here.
Or Russians.
They're Russian spies embedded here who speak perfect English.
Perfect English. Sorry,
with an American accent.
It's reminiscent.
Yes. Little. All right, we haven't even gotten up to this.
Number four.
All right, now this is the Twitter war of the day. You got Senator Kristen Gillibrand. She's firing back at President Trump for his name-calling tweet this morning. Now, remember, she yesterday said that he needs to step aside because of the sexual assault allegations. The president went on Twitter, and he took aim at Gillibrand, calling, saying that Gillibrand used to come to his office begging for political donations and would, quote, do anything for them. So she said, she then responded saying that she cannot be silenced and that she thinks that this is there's a sexual charge to what he was arguing there. That's basically what she's arguing here. And here's what she said to reporters.
It was a sexist smear attempting to silence my voice. And I will not be silenced on this issue. Neither will the women who stood up to the president yesterday. And neither will the millions of women who have been marching since the Women's March to stand up against policies they do not agree with.
And if you'll permit me a follow up, do you see this as sexual harassment by tweet?
I see it as a sexist smear. I mean, that's what it is. And It's part of the president's effort at name calling, and it's not going to silence me. It's intended to silence me.
See, now the thing here is that people are going to go, he didn't say anything. All he said was she would do anything, and that, and you know, the White House, Sarah Sanders today said that this has nothing to do with being a female.
There's no way that this is sexist at all. This is simply talking about a system that we have that is broken, in which special interests control our government. And I don't think that there's probably many people that are more controlled by political contributions than the senator that the president referenced.
I'm not going to comment on the irony that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is saying that her boss, the president, was the guy controlling that by being the guy who was giving the money. Like, if you listen to that, it was like special interest control. Well, that was, it was the president, it was Donald Trump who was the special interest that was controlling that.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, so there's that. Okay. But let's just put that aside and take the grander point. Everybody knew what he meant when he tweeted that.
Oh, it was innuendo. That's what it was.
Yes,
I think everyone's mind went there when you saw it and you knew where he came from and you knew what he was saying.
No, your
sure.
mind is just in the gutter, Ro.
Well, that's what Sarah Sanders said.
But already Gillibrand is being named as a potential for 2020 out of this battle with the Prez, so it sort of has made her brand stronger.
And that's not going to win. The I'm not Donald Trump was already a loser in 2016. Somebody with real ideas and a sharp personality is going to be it's the only way to take down Donald Trump is to have a Democrat, by the way, also not call himself a Democrat, that might be helpful, but to have somebody step up and be, and it might happen internally in the party, they might have a very strong Republican who tries to run against him
potentially
in the primary.
Sure.
But the idea of I'm not Donald Trump is not that's not in and of itself enough.
And just being a woman's rights advocate also is not enough. I don't think you're right that there needs to be a broader vision of where you see the country. And so far, we haven't seen that from her. But.
And we're going to learn it tonight. And I like watching CNN right now. They've got all this exit polling and they're already speculating about what's going to happen when Doug Jones wins. If Doug Jones wins tonight, speculating about how this is going to impact the rest of the country. What happens when Doug Jones loses by close to double digits, which I think is what's going to happen. It'd be closer to double digits than single digits.
The play there was Doug Jones could win if enough people stayed home because they were unenthusiastic about Roy Moore. So particularly women or the suburban voters who just said, hey, enough's enough. I don't feel compelled enough to go to the polls during a special election just to vote for that guy. And Doug Jones potentially could win, even with the electorate being 65% white and 45% evangelical and, you know, a lot going in his favor in terms of conservative values in that state.
The issue is people have to win on the issues here, and there have to be people that they want to vote for. People wanted to vote for Donald Trump because they liked his presentation. You're going to have to find, I mean, and nobody knows anything about Doug Jones, and people like the presentation of Roy Moore. It does to... Again, the wise sage, Violetta Potter-Medic, may have made the most poignant comment here. I hate to even say that, but it's that this is really an indication of how divided we are. This is really an indication of how different America is, where we don't even really recognize each other. The people in Alabama would not recognize Chicagoans, and Chicagoans would not recognize the people in Alabama. It's just lives in a very the world lives very differently in different places.
Well, that's why he represents the people of Alabama, though. I mean, we don't get a vote. And so
right.
He's, you know, this is what it is. He represents the people and they have the information they think they want and still elect him. I don't know. It'd be hard for the Senate to make a move on him, but we'll see.
He's going to get elected tonight, and the Senate is not going to not seat him. He's going to be seated. He may not get on every committee. I doubt he gets on judiciary. That would not be a good move.
No.
And I think they all understand that.
But he'll definitely be getting on his horse after.
Yes, exactly.
His high horse.
Now, would it be better to be on his high horse than a car right now, Violetta?
I think it would if the horse stayed on the shoulder.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com and check it out today.
All right, checking in at
number 3.
The mother of Keaton Jones, who's now been criticized for other Facebook posts other than the one which she shows her child in a video, which with 30 million shares, in the first couple of days of it hitting Facebook in a very sad and emotionally impacting video of a young boy saying he's been bullied and talking about why is he being bullied and all that.
Why would innocent people find so much delight in being mean to a kid for no reason? And it struck such a chord, that video. I mean, millions of people saw it.
Then things came out about her other Facebook posts, which are more controversial. And this, including a picture, there was like a new American Gothic picture of the family on the porch of their house with an American flag and a Confederate flag. And it looked like grandma was holding a pistol and waving it in the air. It was really something. Anyway, the mom was on CBS this morning.
The only two photos on my entire planet that I'm anywhere near a Confederate flag. It was ironic. It was funny.
It didn't have anything to do with racist intent.
No, absolutely not. I've said I spent most of my life being bullied and judged because I wasn't racist.
I mean, it's sad if all that's true, because this little boy is now dealing with double the trauma, you know, the initial bullying, and now his mom's going through all this. And just, this was not the image people thought. I think it rubbed people the wrong way when she started to try to fundraise on GoFundMe off of this, and then it sort of spiraled down from there. But, you know, I hope that the lesson still is remembered about this kid, because that seems to be true still, what happened to him. And it's an example of what happened to so many other kids.
Here he is. Actually, he was also interviewed today for CBS.
You never complain to a teacher. You never complain to a principal.
No.
Because?
I was afraid that they would for sure attack.
Did the video make you feel better?
Made me feel like I had accomplished something real, something that could actually change the world.
Oh. All right. Mm. Well, we wish the best to that kid. And I just want to know who the grandma was with the gun. That's the only thing I want to know. Was that ironic, or was it?
That's what she said.
Tell you, it was very, very, very. It was startling when you saw it. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go.
Number two.
Jimmy Kimmel jokes about the special election with when you got allegations that the GOP's Roy Moore was banned from a mall in his hometown for harassing teenage girls. Remember this, that allegation? Which now, you know, they say was totally fabricated. That's been a debunked story, that according to the Moore campaign. But here's Jimmy's take on it.
Tomorrow is a special election for Senate in Alabama between Doug Jones, a Democrat, and Judge Roy Moore, a man who was banned from his local mall for allegedly hitting on teenage girls when he was 30 years old. Roy Moore has been accused by 8 women, most of these women are Republicans, of sexual misconduct when they were very young. And now the people of Alabama have a choice to make. You can vote for a racist, bigoted, homophobic, alleged pedophile, or someone who isn't any of those. It's a real Sophie's choice you have there, but... Maybe I'm nuts, but to me, if you aren't allowed to set foot inside a Hot Topic store, you shouldn't be allowed in the Senate of the United States.
All right, and finally...
Number one.
All right, here is Rahm Emanuel discussing the sanctuary city status of Chicago on Stephen Colbert. Why was he on Colbert last night? What's going on? And why did he look orange?
Orange is a Cheeto. Bad makeup there.
I don't know. I didn't understand anything that's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Orange is hot these days.
Orange is
the new black.
It's the new white in this particular case.
I'll be president. The orange.
All right, here you go.
Cubs or Sox?
Cubs.
Thin or thick crust?
Thick.
Sears or Hancock?
Hancock.
And Sears or Willis?
I'm for Sears, but I have to go by Willis.
Lake or river?
Lake.
12-inch or 16-inch?
16-inch softball. This is a family-friendly show.
Yes.
Yeah. If you're not from Chicago, you wouldn't
know
that.
You don't know what that means. Yeah. Only in Chicago if you have like an office league or something like that.
Stephen Colbert spent some time here, so kind of gets the gig.
Yes.
Knew what to ask the mayor and... This sounds like it did well.
Yeah. But it is funny.
But why was he there?
Yeah, why was he there? I think he's running for president.
He was promoting his Chicago Stories podcast is the official line.
Mm-hmm.
which Colbert declined to be a guest on.
Right, which is a widely ignored product on the in the podcast universe. All right, I think we need to now just
the top five at five.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, now there are some people that are quite upset about Netflix sending out this tweet. It's easy to get mad at the Twitter now. Notice how the Twitter has become the new way for everybody to find out what a jerk everybody else is.
Or to sort of vent your anger at anything else going on in your life against something minor.
Mm-hmm. People can destroy their own lives in 140 characters.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
You've seen that before.
That is for sure. That is for sure. To the 53 people who've watched A Christmas Prince every day for the past 18 days, who hurt you?
Who hurt you?
Yeah. Now, you know, here's the problem. There is some snarky youngster. Back in my day, we didn't allow people to ever be thumbs. Let alone their own opinion. some snarky youngster who's like, you know, like, where did the bad man touch you, you know, kind of joke right there.
Yeah.
Here, the problem that has arisen here, though, is that it appears that Netflix, you know, which we kind of know when we sign up for it, whenever we hit that I agree button on anything that we do that has to do with, you know, some sort of a screen, like on your computer or your TV or whatever.
Or an app.
You, whenever you agree to anything, they can know. You're agreeing, if you read the fine print, to them knowing almost everything there is to know about you, except for the specifics of your Social Security number. That's about it.
When you're using their product.
And who would be surprised by that? Some people were.
It's not only when you're using a product, though, because they, you know,
some of the stuff can work in the background.
Haven't you ever gone on to new sites and, like, you know, later in the day, and then the things you were looking at earlier pop up in terms of advertising?
Sure, but this specific situation is Netflix accessing how many times you watch their Netflix show or movie.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just want to know, who are these 53 freakazoids who watch that every day for the past 18 days?
So I think I know why this is happening for those 53 people. Is that how many people?
Yeah.
Yes.
So the way I use Netflix recently is I will put it on before I go to bed, and I just it turns on back to the same place because I have Apple TV. So it turns on to the same episode that I watched, and I end up just keep clicking that episode to fall asleep to it because it's on basically muted and just in the background. So maybe they just keep clicking on their Netflix and pressing it.
It's their own background noise, like those devices you can bet that, or buy that, like, play the sound of the ocean or something in the background.
Sure, yeah, but I just do it to Baby Daddy on Netflix.
Right, because who doesn't love falling asleep to Baby Daddy on Netflix?
It's a funny show. It's really lame, but it's funny.
The prince.
So this is your theory? Yeah, you might be right. I don't know.
Apparently, the prince, for those who are not amongst the 53 people who watched it all those days in a row, it's a romantic comedy about a reporter who tries to get the inside scoop on a Playboy prince while pretending to be a tutor.
Oh, I'm going to go watch it tonight. It
sounds like a Hallmark Channel thing, like you would like, V.
Yeah.
That's right up your alley.
Right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wonder if she gets the guy at the end.
You're going to be number 54 who has watched this.
No, she doesn't. She gets hit by a bus like Brad Pitt in the beginning of, you know, what was that?
Don't say that.
Oh, the Meet Joe Black?
Yeah, to Meet Joe Black.
He gets launched like 100
right.
yards.
The most violent, like human versus bus crashes you're ever going to see. That's how that movie ends, by the
way. She was dead the whole time.
Oh, mind twister.
I know.
But people were creeped out because they thought, well, what are they tracking?
And everything.
Everything. Assume it's everything. Even though Netflix says, we just track the big picture stuff, like how many people might be watching on a particular day and then when you repeat kind of thing.
I mean, I don't see why it's a problem if they're tracking what you're watching. You are watching it.
Right. I mean, it's data research. They come up with their own original products now. You know, they're going to start, they cater that their products to what people want. Of course, they're going to look into what people are watching.
I am concerned for these 53 people.
It would have been worse if they kind of put the, like, handles for the different names of the people watching.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's releasing too much information.
I would think so.
I'm just struck by Baby Daddy, right. which I need to stop on this for a second.
I also watch Young and Hungry, but I finished all of those. They're all Freeform channels stuff, which I don't even know what Freeform channel is.
Oh, I did some research on that because I was watching there, and I'm like, what is this channel? Apparently, it's the old ABC Family.
Oh, that makes sense by the storyline. Okay.
Because Elf's been on it like every night, so I'm like, oh, Elf's on it. Watch 5 minutes. But I'm like, what the hell is Freeform?
Yeah. Freeform, it's got some good shows.
Yes. Baby Daddy is a 20-something bachelor bartender becoming an unlikely parent when his ex-girlfriend leaves a baby on his doorstep.
Yeah, seen it 100 times.
Yeah. Interesting story. Right?
6 seasons of it, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Starring Jean-Luc Bélodeau.
I don't really like him. I like the brother. His brother in it is a hockey player, mm-hmm. and he's kind of tall. And just,
what position?
He had, I don't know. He doesn't, they don't get into that.
Derek Thieler is the actor who plays the hockey brother.
Player?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny Wheeler, the
Wheeler brothers.
He's got a mean wrist shot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, we really wish Violetta the best. I don't even know what this is. This is a show. I thought I knew everything that was on television.
I know.
I've never heard of this before.
It's too much to keep track of, though. How could you possibly?
Jean-Luc Bélodeau plays the
great name.
The bartender.
Yes. Is he Canadian or something?
He's the what?
Is he Canadian or something? Is this in English? This show?
Yeah, it's in English.
Netflix also says that there's someone who has watched Pirates of the Caribbean every day this year.
Well, we know who that is.
Oh, we do know who that is.
I happen to like my own work.
No, it's probably Amber.
Do you like?
She misses you.
Oh, God.
Johnny, have you seen Baby Daddy?
Oh, you know, I was up for the part of Danny Wheeler.
You were robbed.
A hockey player?
I was up for that, and I thought, well, I don't even play hockey, because I'm from Kentucky.
And you play cricket.
And I'm exactly in a polo. And I'm, of course, swashbuckling. Look at that. I don't know.
Yeah, I bet it's him.
I have a lot of time on my hands now, because it's kind of harder to find work.
All right. That's very interesting.
It is interesting. Lifetime, meantime, has tweeted out, if Netflix doesn't want you, there's always room on our couch. And if Christmas princes aren't your thing, you've got Meet Cutes, Serial Killers, Queen Pins, and Babysitters Gone Bad. We're not here to judge. So they won't judge you.
I know. But what kind of a jag dork at Netflix sits down and goes, hey, you know what I'm going to do?
I know.
I'm going to troll our own customers.
Well, just 53 of them.
Yeah. But
I mean, they
have
a lot more users than that. They don't
care.
Yeah,
but I guess, you know what? I'm team 53 right now.
I'm not.
I want to stand up for everybody who uses it. Because I use Netflix, but I find myself more on Hulu now than Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really kind of weird. And then I started using Prime. I know it's controversial because Amazon has been begging me now for like 2 years to watch just one video.
I know.
Just watch one.
It's hard to avoid the temptation
just
and the offers.
It.
I don't know. Yeah.
We stand with the 53.
Yeah, I'm standing with the 53. Mm. I don't, you know what? And I don't want to be trolled by the people that I'm paying $12 a month or $13.
That's the
point. And Netflix's prices are going up too. It's going to be $14 a month now.
Oh, dear God, I can't afford that.
I'm going to be trolled by them to have them judge what it is that I'm watching. Go blank yourself, Netflix.
It's like buying something at a store, like a retail store, and the cashier totally mocking your
purchase. Really? You're buying this?
For this brand? What a loser.
What do you need this for?
Guys, get a load of this. He's buying this brand.
The weird part is, too, Netflix is always so super secretive about the streaming numbers. They won't really reveal those. Whenever their articles are always like, well, Netflix doesn't reveal its streaming numbers, so...
Well, we'll tell you exactly who the jerks are who are watching what.
So
I really hope that this 24-year-old communicate. And I love how these old school companies, and Netflix is not really an old school company, but you know it's run by some, you know, mid-50s guy who was a network executive of some sort, right?
You'd expect.
And they hand over their social media to the 24-year-old because they understand it.
Damn millennials.
Right? They just figure that's the thing. That they just, here, Mandy, you handle this. I don't know what to do. You'll handle it.
Right. You know how the tweeters work, right?
Right.
And the Facebookers.
You and Amber just answer all the questions on social media.
Yeah,
just
we
handle it, okay?
Right.
Busy running numbers over here.
And if you have any questions, ask Aiden. He can answer it for you. And that's the thing. And that's all that's going on. And then they're like, okay, cool. And these are like girls, like they're mean girls anyway to begin with. So they got the job. And then they're just gonna sit there and like and just completely troll you. And they're like, wait,
now
all of a sudden, Amber and Aiden, and who was the third person that I had? Mandy have all been called into the boss's office, who now has to have his assistant come in and witness the meeting.
Right.
So he's not accused of any kind of harassing behavior.
And then he's got to have an interpreter also to be able to speak the millennial social media language.
And he can't lock the door because he had to get the automatic lock uninstalled from his
office.
Exactly. Now everyone at the company needs comfort dogs.
And they have to have a safe place. And meanwhile, while they're sitting there being yelled at by their boss, who's not really yelling at them, but he's correcting their action, they're sitting there on their social media. Anyway, this is so lame. And it's like, oh my God.
No, their response is probably like, hey, do you want to know how many people have been talking about us today? Let me show you the retweets.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's not good. Well, it's not good.
Any publicity is good publicity.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
In this day and age, yes.
Okay.
Definitely not in this day and age.
No. It's exactly. This
how
is
did
the proof.
President get elected?
Yes. Okay.
Touche.
Yes, you have a point
there. You just pulled
there.
A Trump move. That's a Trump move.
I had to do it. I'm a millennial.
I'm the president. I was elected. See, right. Everything I do is right.
I don't think that makes it right, though. And I don't think that makes it that I don't think that this really benefits everybody. I don't think it's going to benefit.
We stand with the 53.
Yeah. I'm team 53.
53 strong.
Against you, Amber and Mandy and Aiden, whoever you are.
You messed up, Aiden.
So what could Netflix do now? Give them a...
Well, they could do traffic, which is what we have to do right now. All right, let's talk about something that is not depressing.
Perfect.
Let's
like
try something. Let's try something new. Joni Hirsch-Blackman has written this book, actually written and compiled is probably the better way to put that. This used to be Chicago. This is a great idea.
I love this.
She has looked at a bunch of property around Chicago and told us what it used to be before it is what it is now. Because now there's a lot of property that is now some sort of an incubator for the internet. And I don't even know what that means. I don't understand what the difference between an incubator is and the internet. I mean, I don't know, but
right.
It's like it's something.
Co-working and all this other stuff that's popping up everywhere.
Right. It turns out it used to be a mohair factory or something like that. I don't know. That's kind of what it is. But there is some fascinating stuff in here. And if you like Chicago or you have somebody on your holiday list that is like a huge... Chicago head, that this is, you know, and there's a lot of books out that, you know, look at the great architecture of Chicago, but you're actually telling it kind of a cool story in here.
That's right. We like to tell the story of what different buildings used to be, how they came to be. And a lot of it's very anecdotal and light and amusing. I quote liberally from old newspapers at the time that these buildings were built. And it is really fascinating to read the way newspapers were written back then. Their tone and style are quite amusing.
Like, what did you notice? Just more opinionated when they talked about establishments and that kind of thing?
Or? Definitely opinionated. A lot of just sort of crazy. Like one in particular, they were talking about the Kodak fiend, that there was this new Kodak camera and this terrible person was walking around taking pictures of people and the city council just didn't like it. And this was in connection with the old Kodak factory that was being built that is now a condominium complex.
Mm. Yeah, see
so
a lot of it.
That.
Yeah, a lot of
so
people.
So much of that.
Well, I mean, you're sitting in a space right now that in 3 years is not going to be the Tribune Tower anymore.
That makes me very sad.
I know, me too. It really does, because we all worry about the beautiful nature of the interior in particular. A lot of the exterior is protected, but what will happen?
Right. Well, it's going to be a hotel on condo, we think, or something like that.
I'm a former newspaper reporter, so it's just hard to watch the Chicago
Tribune. Oh, get used to it, baby. They're all going. Well, you know what's interesting to me is like there was, when you look at some of those great, like the old Sun-Times building.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. That was, and everything, the part of the whole architecture movement in Chicago, you know, form and function, and this idea that it was a riverboat on the return of the river. That's mm-hmm. what the architectural design of that particular building was. And then they're like, well, we sold it. Nobody cared anymore. They're like, all right, get rid of it. You know, and it was because it wasn't protected, but it was like the idea that it was steering, you know, information. And this, I mean, the Tribune Tower is a column. It's built as a column. It's a newspaper column.
Right.
And there's, and I don't think that the people who are going to be grabbing bottles of vodka out of the minibar are going to care about that when they're in this column-shaped hotel, when they're, when,
no,
you know, in 3 years.
Hopefully there'll be some sort of way to reminisce about the past. You know, there'll be some plaques on the wall or something.
Most of the buildings, at least in here, that were reused very often do have some kind of little museum corner or mm-hmm. something that gives some idea to people what the building used to be used for.
So what were your favorites and what were some of the ones that hardest to find out things about? Like, did you ever have to talk to families who owned it over the
yes.
years and like stories handed down over the generations?
Yeah, I actually talked to the daughter of a man that had owned one of the buildings. It was a former bank over in kind of Bucktown area. Mm-hmm. Talked to her. She sent me all kinds of information that her father had on the building. One of the most fun ones was the Loyola building on Michigan Avenue, where, I'm sorry, it wasn't that building. It was the Dry House Investments over on Erie.
Oh,
it's that really cool building. I got a hold of a man who lived there when he was a med student in the 1930s before Northwestern.
Student housing?
For Northwestern because they didn't have student housing back then. And that's where he rented a place there and told me all about what the inside looked like because it's not open to the public anymore. Mm. So he talked about what it looked like back then. So there were a lot of different situations where I could talk to people who actually had been in the buildings. One of the buildings was actually owned by my family. So I had an easy way of asking information about that.
Which one was that? In full disclosure to the author.
That one is 1872 North Clybourne. That was my father and uncle's automotive chemical factory.
Is that near the Crate and Barrel?
Fairly close, right across the street from Jason Home and Garden, right by Goose Island.
Yes. Okay.
About a
is that
block
where the
down
Annixter Center is now? What is there now?
There are condominiums. It's called Clybourne Lofts.
Oh, yes.
And we used to hear the story all the time when this
man came in.
And
what was it before?
It was originally, it was a piano factory.
Oh, all right.
And then when my dad and uncle bought it was an automotive chemical manufacturing.
What's that smell?
There you go.
Does that smell ever come up, people say? Or
they had a hard time believing someone was going to turn that building into
I would imagine.
Well, high-end condominiums.
You see that in the West Loop and Fulton Market where I live.
Now,
that area,
yes.
The Google building was the former meatpacking refrigeration, just stories and stories of like
blood dripping down the streets of Fulton Market. I mean, until recently.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we're a little bit, you know, we're used to that now. But back then, that was in the mid-80s. So that was a kind of a brand new thing back then, and it really kind of turned that whole neighborhood, helped it.
Well, I think it's
gentrify.
Sort of in the theme of downtown too. What I find really interesting, like this building, the Tribune Tower, and then the 360 North Michigan Avenue building, which was through many different iterations, many different things. It's a hotel now, and it's these classic old. And then the Hard Rock Hotel, these classic old, and the Virgin Hotel.
Hotels can
all
go
of
on
those,
and on, yes.
Right, that went into these old business, you know, like where there were offices and I remember even as a kid going to some of those buildings, and they were creepy. I mean, you go into these offices, and the offices all connected, doors were connected to other doors, like internally, and I guess that's what they would do in case of a fire or a heart attack or something. I don't know. It was just, but it... It, and there was like one communal bathroom every couple of floors.
Oh,
it wasn't
gosh.
Like
how does
even,
that work?
I don't. Well, I worked at the Wrigley Building back in the 1980s, and that's what that was the case. Mm-hmm. There was like the men's room was like on every four floors. There was a men's room, so you have to take an elevator or the stairs to the men's room, and I don't. Men were much smaller back then. I think
the ceiling
and
height.
There was the width of the stall. Oh. The whole everything was like fun sized. And it's like,
I'm not going to fit in there. Right. What am I supposed to do?
All I'm sitting there thinking to myself was, well, I wonder how many executives after three martinis at lunch came in and dropped dead in this very stall myself
that's
in.
That's a horrible thought.
I have
a book to answer those kinds of questions.
I do.
For you.
But everything's a hotel.
If you go into the Reliance building, which is now the Hotel Elise, they actually kept a lot of that feel when you're up there. It looks like office doors. Mm-hmm. It still feels like an office building in there, but it's a beautiful hotel.
Well, the Palmolive building, as it's known now, the Palmolive, which was originally the Palmolive building, which was the Palmolive soap company, right? Mm-hmm. That was their headquarters. Then it became the Playboy building when Hugh Hefner became the principal tenant in that, when Playboy became the principal tenant. And then they made it into, of course, condos. Not a hotel. I'm shocked. I'm still shocked. But it kept a lot of the internal Art Deco stuff because when Palmolive built it, it was one of the most important features of Chicago because it had that big light on the top of it spin around, and it was an aviation beacon.
Absolutely, the Lindbergh beacon. They actually had to, put a shield up there because once the other skyscrapers were built nearby, like the John Hancock building, they had to shield that light.
The first year of the John Hancock building, it was shining into the John Hancock building, which is right about where the residences started at the Hancock building. That was a big problem for them. Yeah.
Convenient for the voyeurs who might have been in the Palmolive building.
And now what's really interesting is they did something with that. They've kept that light, which I'm very grateful that they did because that light is, it's got importance in the history of the United States, actually.
That's true.
Because of what it was used for aviation beaconing, and then it was, during the war, what they would do with it and stuff. But they keep that light on, but now it's in about a 20-degree moving from north to northeast and kind of back and forth. So it shines over the lake, and you can still see it.
Right.
In parts of Michigan, and aviators still see it, and it's kind of a throwback.
But it's not bothering anybody's window.
Yeah, some fish are upset about it, I would imagine, and other sorts of things. Well, this is actually...
It is fascinating.
There is some story about that building, too, right? The Playboy building was once a monument to cleanliness because of the soap. Is that
That was the original headline on the Tribune's story about the building when it was being built. It was going to be a monument to cleanliness because it was the Colgate-Palmolive soap company, which I just found is a funny headline considering what it became and the way some people thought about
it's a dirty
the Playboy building.
And I think it was Playboy longer than it was Palmolive.
Well, it maybe, but now it's back to Palmolive, so it's probably
I don't count that. Because this is just people. Because I swear to God, they would have sold this. Those condos would have gone for the same amount of money if you called it the Playboy building. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Maybe
something
more
to that.
Yeah, maybe more. Although Vince Vaughn had a little trouble selling his. I remember that. But
well,
I believe
his
it's
was
not,
like 30 million or something, wasn't it? There's
a
limited
million,
audience.
I think, yeah.
Limited buying population for that.
And he had recreated Hef's office in one of the floors. He had the tower at the top, and he had recreated Hef's office, which is. When the real estate agent goes through and you go, well, what am I going to do in here? Well, this is Hef's office. Well, I don't want Hef's office.
Somebody might want that. I don't know. Not my cup of tea.
Right across the street from there where the Loyola Tower is, that actually was a Navy brig for a while. Mm-hmm. That was, you asked about surprising. That was one of the real surprising ones.
The triangle building there on...
It's right next to now where that Canada Goose building is, right behind the water tower. Loyola has a... one of its university towers right there.
Yeah.
And that one there had up on couple of the floors. There were bars on the window. It was a Navy brig.
Oh, well, that'll do. Because the Navy owned a lot of that stuff right just west of the water tower because they had, that was a Navy building. And then just west of that, which is, I think there's a car dealer, fancy ass car dealership there. That was a Navy office building.
Yeah. And so, see, those are things I think people don't know.
Know.
The book seems to appeal to both older people who remember some of this stuff and to the young people who go, whoa, that's cool. I didn't know that.
I go there all the time and I have no idea.
Exactly.
What about the old tavern culture? Because I always wonder about some of those and how they've transformed over the years.
Well, that has been really interesting. The tide houses that that are all over the city, those were all Schlitz tide houses, and they are now various different things. Some are restaurants. You've got Southport Lanes. You've got various places that it's turned into. But those were all tied to Schlitz, the Schlitz company. So if you, when they built a bar,
so they would build the bars originally, the taverns originally.
It had to be the one type of beer, which is so funny when you think about
today.
How opposite. that is from today.
That wouldn't do today.
No. And there was an article, too, that I found really funny. It talked about how, you know, Chicago's no longer doesn't brew beer anymore and probably won't. And I thought, well, things have changed there, too.
Yes. Yeah, completely. Well, Pabst and Schlitz and
Old Style.
The old, But no, Old Style, I think was always made in it was the number one beer here, but it was always made in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
But Pabst, Schlitz, and the other smaller ones throughout the years. But right now, it's just a gigantic thing. But the interesting, you know, again, this is. And now I'm feeling like super old. I would like.
You'll be one of the people who remember the buildings as they were.
Those Schlitz signs on the building. Those they were backlit. You know, in my day. Mm-hmm. But you know, back then they, you know, when they, originally they weren't just hanging shingles off the thing, and they're like every other bar had a Schlitz sign on it, and you just had to, you know, I was like, all right, I guess we're going in for a Schlitz.
That's right. If you were having
even
a beer,
when I was 10, I was thinking.
I remember the Old Style so much, but that's right. They were so prolific across the city.
Old Style was the number one beer sold in Chicago in the 1980s.
Okay, that makes sense. Then.
That's why it beat out Budweiser, and Budweiser was like, well, what? Miller and Budweiser were like, how is it possible, It was, you know, but
that beer.
But Chicago was always, you know, they always had the fix in. There was always an answer. All right. Well, congratulations on this.
Well, thank you very
much. It's called This Used to Be Chicago. Joni Hirsch Blackman is the author. And you can find it where all fine books are sold, which is the internet. And it.
And
bookstores.
Local bookstores.
There are local books. And I know you want to support local bookstores.
I
and that's
love
important
local
to
bookstores.
Do.
Me too.
Yeah. So there you go. This Used to Be Chicago. All right. Coming up right now is Violetta with the WGN Tour of Trouble Spots. The Hawks coming your way in about 15 minutes right here on 720 WGN. We're going to play Blackhawks Pick'em. We've already played it, actually. I'm just going to tell you what the results were and who's going to win. Dave is our caller, and Dave has got Artem Anisimov. I just have to say this for – I'm not going to go through every one of these things.
Okay,
I'm just doing this for legal purposes. That Dave picked Artem Anisimov, Brent Seabrook.
Nice.
And Alex DeBrincat.
Wow.
The rest of us picked the rest.
The rest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's how that worked. And right now, the callers have 32 total points. I'm coming in second right now with 26 total points. Violetta's behind me with 21. Then comes Kevin. Then comes Judy. And then comes Anna.
Gosh, I'm in last place. How'd that happen?
Oh, I moved up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're
the whole season
place.
You've been in last place. Now I'm there.
So there you go.
All right. Well, congratulations to the listeners.
Yeah.
Good
what does
luck,
the season long winner get? Have we decided that?
I don't even know what the weekly so $50 Lou Malnati's Nighties gift certificate, think is what the weekly or the daily winner gets. But the season winner, I mean there's a lot to go on here, my friends. There's a lot going on. I don't have time for all these details. Stop asking me details I don't know the answer to. You know, coming up in just a few, once we're done with the show tonight, this is going to be something.
Yes, we're going to practice.
We are going upstairs into a rehearsal studio. Who knew there was even such a thing here?
It's very professional.
And we're doing a table read.
Is that code for something?
Yeah,
no.
The doors don't lock.
Yeah, a rehearsal studio? I've never heard of one.
Will Harvey Weinstein be there?
Too soon.
Who's playing Matt Lauer in this play?
Is there a green room?
I think is it Christmas themed? I can't even remember. I didn't really look at the script yet.
We're going to a table read for our performance on Friday during the Holiday Spectacular here on WGN.
How come we're calling it a Holiday Spectacular when the fake war on Christmas is over?
It's over.
Shouldn't we be calling it a Christmas Spectacular?
Yeah.
We're part of the resistance.
Oh.
We're taking on Christmas.
Gotcha.
Isn't there some Lifetime movie taking on Christmas? Isn't there something like that?
There's never a war on Christmas.
No, they don't
on Lifetime.
Do war. It's all happiness on Lifetime.
I was just going to say that. They all start with a male or female getting in a car accident and somehow stumbling into this perfect family that's ahead as a widow or widower. And then they're like, oh my God, this is the perfect family. And then they like, you know, it's some like rich like ad executive from New York who's like in Bumble, whatever, in upstate New York. And then they all fall in love and it's beautiful.
Wait, all the ones I watch, it's about death.
Well, I was thinking the Hallmark channel.
Like the husband kills the wife. And
No. That's
during,
Lifetime
during,
channel.
Yeah, that's Lifetime, not Hallmark. Not
Hallmark, I guess, is
it's Hallmark. The Hallmark channel.
Hallmark,
and then the Lifetime channel right now, it's
Lifetime.
All about Christmas. But then when it's, but February for sweeps, it's all about how the wife had to kill the husband.
Yeah,
and it was all okay.
That's when
but
it's watchable.
But it's always his fault.
Right.
It's always his fault.
It doesn't even matter whose fault it is.
Right, it's because he cheated. These are the names of the movies that explain everything, right?
Yeah.
Low life husband,
right.
Four.
And they always had a really great relationship to start off, but then something went wrong.
Yeah. And then the next thing you know, it's
she's going after his money and, you know, somebody's drink is
poison.
If
it's so predictable, then why does everybody watch it?
Because we love it.
And you know, the best part are like the 15-minute commercials in between.
Oh, you got to record
I'm not
them.
Kidding. A movie will last 4 hours on
right.
that station.
Exactly.
Mario Lopez's contract isn't going to pay itself.
Is he on that?
There's like there's like a 2 minute commercial too for some gadget that you now must have that like vacuums your cat or something like
right.
that.
Right. Just call here.
Yes.
Five easy payments.
And you're like, all right, I'm done with it.
Or that little board.
But now you can get two for the price of one.
That's a great segue into what our gift exchange is.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that? We probably got some of those tonight.
Yeah.
And don't give anything away.
As seen on TV.
Yes. It's, and then during our table read, after our table read, we're going to be exchanging our gifts.
Oh, we have to wait to do the presents?
Yeah. Sorry. That's how it is.
And did we decide, because it was very complicated getting to this answer, but it's a gift exchange, like a grab bag, and everything is as seen on TV items.
Right. So how are we exchanging the gifts? Because I just bought a random gift, not for anyone.
I just want to tell you what I already got.
No.
I got as seen on TV. I'm going to tell you.
I
got you all Otezla.
Oh,
I don't even know what it's for.
Otezla,
which is a drug for, I don't know whether it's for
hyperactivity.
It's either for skin ailment or digestive problems. I'm not quite sure.
You can use it for both.
But I got, because every time I turn on TV, that's all I see a commercial for that. And then I see the guy who's got Parkinson's who's looking in the mirror and sees his dead wife. And then it turns out in the middle of the commercial,
creepy. She's
actually alive. It's like, oh no, she's really there.
Yeah, I want some of those pills.
That's the creepiest commercial on TV
right
now.
No, that wasn't a commercial. That was the Lifetime movie.
Oh.
Starring Mario Lopez.
I'm telling you, it was very weird.
It sounds weird. Did you get that for anybody? For the
I also got the Parkinson's pills, too.
Well,
people.
There's a pill popper. Well, not a pill popper. There's a pill dispenser.
That would be us.
I almost got that for the NCAA
TV.
I
saw that.
I was going to get that. Like, maybe some people here have to take a lot of pills. I don't know.
I'm worried we're going to duplicate because some of them were just too good.
There's so many, though.
I bought one for everybody.
Mine's what?
Yeah.
See, there's always a guy who shows everybody up. This is like that Office episode when Michael buys like an iPad when there's like a $20 minimum or maximum.
Listen to Judy go, let him spend his money.
Yeah, let him spend his money.
What are you bitching about, Kevin?
I actually had to go return one of mine because I'm like, what? This is $45? I'm like, no. And I had to do the self-checkout. The lady had to come and take it off my thing at Walmart.
So the as seen on, although you know what they should do that at the pharmacies too, is seen on TV so that you can see all of the different things,
the
different products that you're going to get. Like, you know, we've got the heart failure medicine. I'm not even sure what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, that's a depressing commercial, too, where it's like, you know, like an old fat guy and his granddaughter's running upstairs. Can we do this tomorrow? And then they're singing.
I can't
that,
breathe.
You know, there will be, you know, tomorrow. They're singing that song tomorrow.
There
and
will
you're
be
like,
no tomorrow.
Right.
For
it's
you.
Like, then it's like
yeah.
you know,
that's
for
sad.
A lot of people. For a lot of people, there is no tomorrow.
Oh my
and you're like, no!
What a sad
no,
commercial.
Grandpa's going to be dead! And they show some woman with her swollen ankles. And it's like, oh no!
You really memorized it.
Are you
for
up all night
there
watching TV?
There is no tomorrow. Well, if you start watching those like drug commercials, it's a very... It's a depressing kind
they
of...
They suck you in, though.
I used to like all the ED drugs because it was like, you know, some, you know, hot girl kind of making out with an older guy. And you're like, okay, all right, I get it. But now it's like everything, whether it's, you know, plaque psoriasis or heart failure or... And again, the Parkinson's one is just creepy because it's like a horror film when you're watching it because you don't know. And if you have this condition and you're watching it because it's all about you'll have visions of other people being there and your dead relatives and all of a sudden your wife shows up and then she's not there and you're like, oh, she died. No, she didn't. Yes, she is. She's there.
Right. Some of those side effects are scary.
Oh, the side effect is the whole commercial.
Well, but then you're like, if you got that condition, you're freaked out by the commercial. You're like, I don't want this. It's a whole deal.
You probably think you have it when you hear the
right.
commercial.
Or
like,
then there's something like dry eye that doesn't even seem, you know, that serious. They think that, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that takes place in a doctor's office. I watch too much TV.
Really?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like President Trump. I watch 8 to 12 hours of television a day.
And
I have an entire
Coke.
Case of Diet Coke while I'm doing it. And a dried out, very, very well done steak.
With ketchup.
There is, but there that dry eye thing, they always have to have in the eye doctor's office.
Yeah, but that doctor kind of creeps me out in that.
It's a lady.
Yeah,
isn't it?
She's a lady, but she kind of soft voice.
Sometimes they show too much, like it's a skin thing, and they're like actually showing. You're like, oh, dude.
Well, they show you like what it would like, or they'll show you like a raspberry and go, does it look like this? There's all kinds of little things, like cues in those commercials. They're not showing you the problem, but you know you're like out, like the woman's got like plaque psoriasis and she's out like
choosing which raspberries to buy, like
looking at raspberries in the store, right? Or like fall flowers with a bunch of, you know, prickly stuff on the side of them.
Oh,
and you're
geez.
Like, oh, I get what's going on here.
It's true. They don't give you the detail of the thing.
There's another guy chasing his dog. There's one on right now. There's a guy chasing his dog down a path, right? And then being licked on the face by the dog. And you're like, oh, by the way, in case you've got a rash.
Now they're in a river
picking
up a virus.
It's a Tesla, right? It's all right.
Tesla. Isn't that what you got us?
Yes, I think it's for plaque psoriasis. I get you all that. Does anybody have it? If you don't have it, you won't get
that
it.
Would not work.
Look, now they're shopping. I would like some of that because I want to be this person in the commercial.
Well, because then you get to wear sleeveless stuff because otherwise, you know, everybody goes, ow, what's wrong with you?
She's like, I'm going to try this dress on.
For the first time ever.
She's breathing deeply. Okay, I can do it.
If anybody's still shopping, I want one of those twisty boards that you see from the Shark Tank creator woman. You know?
My mom got one of those.
If anyone's still shopping, yeah. I hope everyone has their gift. It's almost 7 o'clock.
And you don't have time to go get it.
Your mom got one. Did it work?
I don't know. I tried it once, but it was late at night. I immediately fell off the thing. It's tricky. It's tough.
No one's going to stay on that for more than like a minute and a half.
Every one of those exercise things makes it look like it's no big
right.
deal to
Make
get
it
on
like,
it.
It's fun.
Yeah,
right.
Those things are like dangerous. I'm telling you, somebody's going to wipe out on one of those things.
Well, we don't know that for sure. I'm sure that's a very fine UL approved
it's
product.
A great, yeah.
Yes, they're all fine. We don't know that.
Hit the bell.
All right, thank you. There you go. All right, thank you. Thank you, Kev. Every day somebody makes a fatal mistake on this program. Today it was Kev.
It wouldn't be the show.
Violetta's got the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.